I'm Jennifer Hambrick, midday host of Classical 101, WOSU Public Media in Columbus. I'm speaking with Tony Zielinczyk, who is Associate Professor of Music, the Tuba Professor at Capital University Conservatory of Music. Thanks for coming in today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We're going to have a conversation about your new tuba concerto, which you'll be performing in as soloist in the world premiere with the McConnell Arts Center Chamber Orchestra on Sunday, May 19th at 3 o'clock on a concert called Minimalists and More. I understand that you composed your tuba concerto on commission.
The story is fun. Antoine Clark, who is a very good friend I've known for a long time, the conductor of the orchestra, came to me over a year ago and asked if I would solo with the orchestra. And I said, sure, I would love to. He said, send me a list of tuba pieces that have orchestra accompaniment and let's see if we can find anything that works for both of us. And so I looked around and quite frankly, our repertoire is a bit limited. So I looked at the four or five pieces that I enjoy, and I called him back and I said, look, how would you feel if I write something for myself to play? And he knows that I'm a composer, and that was an easy sell. And he said, sure, go ahead. And the fun thing is that I know everybody in the orchestra for the most part. So it's like writing music for your friends. So it was a commission from Antoine that I forced upon him.
Oh, okay, sure, sure. So it really is sort of like necessity became the mother of invention.
Absolutely.
Here.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. What was the inspiration for the music itself in your concerto?
This year, this is their sixth season, as I believe. Antoine, through the McConnell Arts Center, has created a situation where they bring in a visual artist, and he tries to tie that in with their programming for the year. And this year's visual artist is a glass blower, and I got a chance to watch him work. I got to see Jack work. We did a preseason concert out at his glass-blowing studio. And watched him work and was at that time was throwing around the ideas for the piece. What am I going to make this about? How can I incorporate fire? And I'm a big science fan. If it hadn't been for all the math, I would probably be an astrophysicist today. But I could do just enough math to be a musician. But I've always been intrigued by space and fire. And I thought, fire, stars, okay, let's talk about stars and creation because, you know, Jack is taking basically a molten ball of glass and turning it into these beautiful shapes. And I said, where else does that happen? And then I, of course, went to one of my great heroes, Carl Sagan, the great astronomer and philosopher. And I remember him and one of his great quotes where he said, we are all star stuff. Everything that we are comes from the heart of a dying star. I'm like, oh, that's really fantastic. Stars, you know, created in the fire, created in the heat. So that's where it started. I thought, okay, I want to use that. And that was the jumping off point for the piece.
Okay. I love that Carl Sagan idea that we're all star stuff, in particular that we come from the hearts of dying stars
right.
as well. So, I mean, does that idea in particular, that we come from the heart of dying stars, does that play a role in the concerto?
Yeah, there's definitely a continuation. When the star gives up all of its material at the end of its life, it goes off and becomes a new life everywhere else. And so the piece is, there's no sense of that in the piece itself, but definitely on my mind, as the piece moves forward, it moves forward into light. You know, it starts in light and moves forward into more light after.
If you can, could you talk us through your concerto? What types of sounds we can expect to hear when we come to the concert on May 19th? And if there is kind of a program, if you will, a story connected with the piece?
Sure. And going back to Carl Sagan, what I did was I went back through a lot of his books. And I mean, I've read all of them and love them ever since I was in high school. So I wanted to find three quotes that I could pull three movements from. And the first movement, of course, is We Are Made of Star Stuff. That one comes from Cosmos. And I pulled the quote from that, and I kind of let it, sometimes when you write, the musical idea comes first. You'll get a melody, you'll get a harmony, you'll get some sort of rhythm, you'll get something. It depends on the piece. I'll work that way sometimes. Sometimes I go with a title or a word or a story or a poem that can provide the jumping point. And I wanted to use Carl's quotes as the jumping point. So I came up with the three quotes first, and then I sat down with those and started thinking about sounds. And the interesting thing about the sounds is that the sounds all have a connection to my upbringing as a composer. The first movement, which is called We Are Made of Star Stuff, it's just a joyful dance through the universe of just enjoying the fact that we all come from the same place. It's very light, very melodic, energetic, rhythmic, but the actual chord progression is one that I used to just mess around with when I walked into my theory class. And I'd sit at the piano as the students were coming in the room and I would play this chord progression and it was an arpeggiated thing. And they're all like, what's that from? And I said, well, it's going to be from a piece someday. And they said, when? I said, I don't know, whenever it happens. And so I'd actually used it once before in a solo tuba and piano piece in a completely different sound, completely different style. And I was sitting in front of the piano, and I started to play it again. I'm like, perfect. So that's the first movement. It's a progression that I came up with probably 15 years ago. And the melodic idea is different now, but that became the impetus for that. The second movement is called the Prayer for a Pale Blue Dot, which comes from his book, Pale Blue Dot, A Vision of a Human Future in Space. And if you remember it, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's a picture looking back from, I believe, the Pioneer 10 spacecraft turned its camera around and looked back at the Earth. And all you see in this black backdrop is this tiny little blue dot that is us. And it's a perspective idea of, you know, we live on this tiny little thing in the middle of this vastness. And it's got a bit of a little bit more darker undertone in this one. And I use a particular pitch set that was actually showed to me by one of my theory teachers in my undergraduate training at Bowling Green, Don Wilson. It's gorgeous. It's a beautiful pitch set. And again, it's a pitch set that I have been messing around with for, that would have been in the early 90s.
Hmm.
And had never used it until this moment. And the third movement is called With Each Other, and it takes a quote from the book Contact, which, of course, became the very famous movie, where the aliens talk about what an interesting species we are, but yet you try to go through this all by yourselves, and you don't work with each other. And so that's why it's called With Each Other. And in this movement, I incorporated a lot of world music ideas that I had studied when I was an undergraduate student. Studied heavily the Afro-Caribbean and Haitian and Western African styles of music, particularly of the Ewe people of Western Africa, and the Ghana and Nigeria. And they have a social dance that they do called gahu, which is not a set form. It's not a set rhythm. It changes depending on where you are. But that was the impetus for that, was to actually incorporate that style. And I made totally sure that I credit those people, because when I started to study that music, I had never studied any world musics until I got to Bowling Green. And it really opened up a lot. It opened up a different sound palette, a different rhythm palette, a different everything. And again, have not had any opportunity in anything that I was working on to pull this all together. So all of these old influences kind of rolled themselves into this modern idea. The genesis was really interesting. And the piece wrote it. I've never written anything this fast. Usually I will, you know, despair over these things for months and months and months and months and months. And this one just went like ridiculously fast, because
this particular movement, mm-hmm. or the whole concerto?
Piece. Uh-huh. The whole concerto, uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any idea why that may have been?
I think it is the culmination of 25 or 30 years of writing. And, you know, the whole time as an artist, you know, and you understand this, the idea of being an artist takes a long time to grow. You don't just wake up someday as a 20-year-old and say, I'm an artist and here's my voice. It takes a long, long, long time to build it and a long time to create and a ton of exploring. And I think finally just some things intersected that said, you know, here are your aesthetic ideals are this big. They're not this small place. And I just allowed myself, I just finally said after this much time, you know, why not? Let's explore all these other ideas that have been in my musical thinking, but have never made it into my composing.
Yeah, isn't that interesting when you finally, in one way or another, essentially give yourself permission?
Right,
you
know? That's exactly it.
Yeah,
exactly it.
Yeah, the floodgates can open. So as I mentioned at the top of this interview, you'll be performing your tuba concerto on a concert called Minimalists and More.
Mm-hmm.
And the program also features music by arch minimalists John Adams and Philip Glass, among others. It doesn't sound like it, but stylistically speaking, is your concerto part of the and more portion of the program?
It's definitely the and more, because I didn't want to go head to head with those guys, because you know those composers are the composers that really were influential in my early time as a composer. I mean, it was an interesting upbringing for me compositionally, because I started out non-tonal. Most young composers come at the art from a tonal place, and then try I look back on that, and as I teach young composers now at school, they come in and they want to write tonal music, and that's the hardest musical language to manipulate, I think, because sure, we can sit down and play some chords, but then you have to know how the next one is supposed to happen, and then you have to know where this is all going, and you have to have a really pretty well thought out idea.
Mm-hmm.
So non-tonal music was an easier place to start for me, and I came to tonality later. But the minimalist idea was later in my life when I started to pay attention. So I was a pretty dyed-in-the-wool serialist for a long time, and then abandoned that pretty quickly after a while. But then just in the last 15 years or so have decided to explore more in the tonal world. Mm-hmm. The nice thing is that I now have all those tools in the toolbox. I never gave any of them up. So there are minimalist elements in my music. I mean, there are some moments of ostinato, but nothing along the lines of Glass and Steve Reich and those gang. And of course, you know, there's Arvo Pärt is on this show as well. The Fratres is one of my all-time favorite pieces. And I really thanked Antoine. I said, they're putting me on the concert with those guys, because I knew it ahead of time. And I listened to all those works again to put something on the show that would complement rather than fall in line with. So hopefully we end up with a nice complement to those pieces.
You touched on this earlier in this conversation, but most people probably don't think of the tuba as a solo instrument. So the repertoire for solo tuba is maybe a little bit limited, but could you talk a little bit about that and kind of where you see your tuba concerto fitting into that context?
Sure. Well, there is a lot of tuba music out there. In reality, there's a glut of music. The difficulty comes in sifting through it to find artistically what suits me as a soloist. And of course, I look at this also as an educator, what would suit my students. I had a great conversation with a friend not too long ago, and one of his comments to me was, you know, there are so many of those pieces out there that only about 5 people can play. And he said, we need to have more things that more people can play, not to necessarily say that we need to dumb down the medium at all. That's not the point. The thing is that we can create music that's, and again, this is another one of those dangerous words to use in music, is accessible. But I'm talking about technically accessible. You know, musically, some of the most beautiful music on the planet is the most technically simple. Mm-hmm. So that's yeah. Easy. So I wanted to create something. Obviously, the nice thing about writing your own piece is that you pretty much know you'll be able to play it, as opposed to pulling out someone else's concerto that might take you 6 months to learn. But mine falls into that zone of, I mean, it's, and again, thinking like an educator, it's definitely a Class A solo. It's very accessible, both tonally and technically. It has challenges in it. It has challenges for the listener, which is very important to me. I think I used to think about that too much in the past, about challenging the listener or maybe even over-challenging the listener. Now it's a balance of – it's storytelling for me, really, at this point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in the realm of the tuba repertoire, I'm hoping that this finds a place as a very playable and enjoyable to play for the soloist. I mean, that's really important as well. I think it's fun to play.
Once again, Tony Zielinski, you are the tuba professor at the Capital University Conservatory of Music. You will be performing the world premiere of your own tuba concerto with the McConnell Arts Center Chamber Orchestra May 19th at 3 p.m. in the Bronwyn Theater at the McConnell Arts Center in Worthington. Thanks again for talking with us about your piece.
Thank you so much.